It's 9 o'clock here, folks. If we can get into our seats and get ready to go here. Get our gavel. Welcome, everyone, to our last day of the council meeting. We will be focusing on the on-demand group this morning, as we see there's a lot of interest in this one. But just a couple of announcements before we get into this morning's agenda item. I just want to remind everyone that anyone that is interested, either here in the room or online, that's interested in being our APs, the application system is still open. We will be taking applications through October 3rd. So our first on the agenda this morning is our on-demand gear conflict working group. Obviously, there's a lot of interest here today. I do want to outline, so there's some expectations of how we're going to approach this first. We are going to go through the on-demand gear report that has been developed, and we're going to go through the report itself. We'll go through that process. I believe there's a motion related to that, and then we will get into the framework. We'll have presentations by both. Thank you. We will have presentations by both the GARFO staff and council staff, and then we will go through some motions, and then we will open up for public comment when we get to the motion phase of the on-demand framework. So I will kick it over to Mr. Pierdenock as chair of the on-demand working group.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you've outlined what's before us, so we're going to go over the on-demand the term of reference 3B report that has been prepared for review and approval by the council. We'll first have up Emily Bodell, the lead PDT, to make the presentation. Emily?
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. My name is Emily Bodell. I am the council staff lead for the on-demand fishing gear conflict working group. Today, before we get started with the bulk of the presentation, I just wanted to review the three 2025 priorities for the on-demand working group. The first being a joint action with the Mid-Atlantic Council and GARFO to revise gear marking regulations across FMPs. As Chair Pierdenock and Chair Salerno mentioned, we'll be hearing a little bit more about that later today. The next priority for the working group was to develop a working group report on gear conflict solutions for lobster and jonah crab, gillnet, and other trap pot fisheries. We completed part of this term of reference last year here in Gloucester, and we'll be presenting the second part, the term of reference 3B report, in just a minute. And the last priority is to continue work addressing terms of reference and refining those terms of reference as needed. So since we last presented to you all here at the council, the working group has met twice. Once on July 23rd, we met via webinar. This meeting started with some updates on the joint alternative gear marking framework, as well as some information on the Atlantic large whale take reduction team's revised timeline. We also reviewed a series of follow-up topics from the April 29th meeting, a couple of things of interest like vessel maneuverability, viewing distance, things like that. And then we also reviewed the outline of the term of reference 3B report and began developing some recommendations to include in that report. On August 26th, the working group met in Wakefield, Massachusetts, and via webinar. We again received a presentation and provided some feedback on the joint alternative gear marking framework, and the working group also worked to finalize the term of reference 3B recommendations to the council. So without further ado, I'll present the term of reference 3B report. In terms of outline, so the report consists of kind of three main sections. First is the background. So we have some information on the on-demand working group's composition, membership, and then information on the working group's goals and our terms of reference. There's also a section including some information on just on-demand fishing gear more generally, as well as some gear testing programs that the working group has received updates on over the course of the past couple of years. The next major section is a terms of reference progress update. I'll be going through that starting on the next slide. And then the kind of last section of the report is focused on these on-demand working group recommendations for reducing gear interactions between on-demand gear, used in the Northeast lobster and Jonah crab fishery and other types of fishing gear. I just wanted to share with you all some of the kind of an overview of the terms of reference progress that we've made thus far. You may recognize these slides from June, but just providing a little bit more detailed overview. So the first term of reference for the working group is to identify the implications of on-demand fishing gear use for council-managed fisheries. The working group has discussed this at each of its meetings. There are really kind of two primary impacts to council-managed fisheries. The first, of course, being fixed gear fisheries that may potentially have the opportunity to use on-demand fishing gear. And then for other fixed gear vessels or mobile and recreational fleets and charter fleets, they'll likely be fishing kind of in the same areas as on-demand fishing gear and would need to have a general awareness of where and how the gear is used in order to avoid gear conflicts. Kind of a main component of this term of reference is that just noting that the council did initiate the alternative gear marking framework in April of 2025, and the working group has received updates along the way. And as I mentioned, provided some feedback as well, which you'll hear about later today. Term of reference two is to engage with fishermen, industry members, members of the public, and other relevant stakeholders to identify potential interactions between on-demand and mobile, fixed, and recreational fishing gear use. The working group, again, has discussed this at length. All of our meetings are open to the public, and the chair does a great job of making sure that not only the members of the working group, but also members of the public are able to kind of engage on these topics. So that's been really helpful, especially for achieving term of reference two. The working group has largely identified concerns about mobile gear potentially towing or dragging over fishing gear inadvertently, leading to gear damage, which could potentially incur some costs. Also, recreational or charter fishing vessels could potentially hook into on-demand gear with their own fishing gear or if they're anchoring. I will note that it's been somewhat challenging for the working group to get a concrete idea of the full scope of use of on-demand fishing gear looking into the future. Of course, there's some uncertainties. But also, it can be somewhat challenging to apply past fishing effort data and kind of project it towards the future. But the working group has looked at several sources of information, including a report developed or a presentation on a report to be released by MITRE, who's contracting with NOAA Fisheries. They developed these kind of gear conflict risk maps that showed where potential for gear conflict is elevated or lower. We also looked at some data about vertical line estimates used for the decision support tool as part of the Atlantic large whale take reduction team process. Terms of reference 3A and 3B are those reports that we mentioned earlier. So term of reference 3A was really focused on providing advice on reducing gear interactions that might result from risk reduction measures under consideration for gill nets and other trap pot fisheries in the form of a final report by spring 2024. So we presented that to you last year here in Gloucester. The working group put forward three consensus statements, and so I just wanted to provide a quick update on those. And again, there's more details in the report itself. First, the council tasked the enforcement committee to provide some input to the on-demand working group. I'll cover that in just a minute. The council also initiated the joint alternative gear marking framework. And finally, the last consensus statement was to kind of continue collaborating with the Mid-Atlantic Council and the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. That work has continued through these bodies' membership on the on-demand working group, and we've also been kind of collaborating on the framework. And then term of reference 3B is kind of due to be completed today. Term of reference number four is related to exploring gear impacts and loss issues related to gear interactions. Most recently, the working group received an update from the Northeast Fisheries Science Center on a February 2025 instance of gear conflict in the Massachusetts restricted area. It's been helpful for the working group to kind of hear about when gear conflicts have occurred, but also the measures that have been taken after the fact to kind of address these gear conflicts and potentially reduce future ones. Term of reference number 5 is to coordinate with the Enforcement Committee to identify recommendations to improve the enforceability of on-demand fishing. As I mentioned earlier, the council tasked the Enforcement Committee with reviewing some information from the working group. The Enforcement Committee met in November of 2024 to review a series of questions that the on-demand working group had posed and some discussion related to kind of straw man idea of potential changes to gear marking regulations. You received some feedback from the Enforcement Committee at your December 2024 meeting, and the on-demand working group also received a presentation in January 2025. And then the working group will kind of continue to engage the Enforcement Committee as needed. And finally, term of reference 6 is to suggest what modifications would be required to replace a buoy, technologies that would mark where gear is on the bottom, and to enable vessels to visualize that gear. The on-demand working group discussed the functional equivalence of a buoy at the July and September 2024 working group meetings. And then it's also included as a topic in the joint alternative gear marking framework. There we go. So now focusing in on term of reference 3B, and that is to develop recommendations on reducing gear interactions between on-demand gear used in the Northeast lobster and Jonah crab fisheries and other types of fishing gear, including the fixed gear, mobile gear, and recreational and charter fleets in the form of a final report by fall 2025. The on-demand working group discussed these recommendations beginning at its April meeting, and then as I mentioned, at the July and August meetings, kind of worked to refine and finalize those recommendations. We will acknowledge that the working group had some discussions around some of the challenges of the timing of making these recommendations, particularly, you know, there's kind of a parallel timeline going on with the alternative gear marking framework. A couple of members noted that understanding or knowing the outcome of the framework might make their recommendations perhaps a little bit more specific, but the working group was able to put together some recommendations that will kind of potentially lead to some future work. In terms of other discussions, the working group had some kind of extensive discussions around a couple of topics, particularly the use of pre-trip notifications or gentlemen's agreements as tools to reduce gear conflict. The working group originally kind of considered putting forward some sort of consensus statement around these topics, but didn't arrive at consensus around forwarding those recommendations. However, the group did want to reflect that these topics were discussed at length at various meetings. And so we included some of that discussion in the report just for the record and in case these ideas are revisited in the future. So the working group put forth 2 consensus statements that are included in the report. I'll just kind of read them out and then talk a little bit about some of the discussion that occurred to get us to these consensus statements. So consensus statement number 1 is that the on-demand working group recommends that all approved alternative gear visualization systems show alternatively marked gear locations in real time. Likewise, approved gear marking systems should also operate in real time. The working group recognizes the need for further discussion on these systems before implementation and recommends soliciting industry input regarding possible specifics of these systems, including the definition of real time. The working group also recommends identifying legal questions related to implementing a gear marking and detection system specific to fishing location data and data sharing. So the working group has spent a lot of time at various meetings kind of discussing different aspects of a gear marking and visualization system. So the system that would actually digitally mark where on-demand or alternatively marked gear is located, and then the system, again, kind of by which another user would be able to see where that gear is located. But I think the working group kind of reached a point where they've provided a lot of input, but it's also going to be important to seek additional industry input as the system is developed. The working group, we put together just kind of a short list of potential topics for further discussion. These are things that the working group has covered at past meetings, but again, kind of needs some more information. the first of which being the definition and necessity of real-time on-demand fishing gear location data. The working group had a lengthy discussion about this in August, kind of trying to figure out what the definition of real-time should be. Do gear locations need to be uploaded or updated and accessible instantaneously? Is that a 5-minute lag time, a 20 to 30 minute lag time? And so that's definitely something that kind of needs to be thought about a little bit more. Also considering the availability to various user groups, it's really important for vessels to understand where this gear is, and so they're able to avoid interacting with the gear. Viewing distance is another thing the working group has talked a lot about. The Northeast Fisheries Science Center trials use kind of 5 nautical miles as a viewing distance, and which seems to be working pretty well. But the working group noted it's challenging to identify kind of a minimum distance that would be needed. A lot of factors that go into that, like vessel maneuverability, which is impacted by a lot of things like weather and tides and all kinds of conditions out on the water. And finally, data sharing options. So we've had some staff from NOAA come and present a couple of different data sharing options that might be implemented in this type of system. And the working group hasn't indicated a preference for one, but again, a topic that could use perhaps some more discussion. Specific to this idea of data and location sharing and confidentiality, the working group talked a little bit about the requirements for different fisheries to kind of share their location, and was interested in understanding a little bit more the implications of having to share your location in order to receive on-demand gear locations. So that kind of nests into the data sharing options discussion as well. Consensus statement 2 is that the on-demand working group recommends that vessels operating in areas with alternatively marked gear have the technology to visualize that gear. The working group recognizes the potential for economic effects to the mobile gear fleets and recommends that an economic evaluation be conducted to better understand the effects. The on-demand working group recommends discussing potential cost mitigation strategies and benefits of digital marking and visualization. The working group also recommends further discussion regarding the nature of gear conflicts with recreational fisheries, the potential economic effects, and best practices for avoiding such conflicts. So the working group in discussion around this consensus statement recognized the potential economic impacts to the mobile fleet of having to have systems on board to visualize this gear. And express some equity concerns regarding the costs and burdens on different fleets, the mobile and fixed gear fleets. The working group noted that fixed gear fishermen would be able to fish in vertical line closure areas with on-demand gear, so it might be appropriate to ensure that mobile vessels can detect that gear in order to reduce instances of gear conflict. But there was also a note that cost prohibitive gear visualization requirements could potentially create de facto closures for the mobile fleet. And so that was a concern that was raised. The working group felt that an economic evaluation would be helpful to understand the costs of technology to view real-time on-demand gear locations. Again, once we firmly identify the definition of real-time. And it could also examine the costs of potential lost or damaged gear due to gear conflicts. I'll also note that the working group has discussed satellite connectivity costs and the possibility of using cellular data at prior meetings. A lot of concerns around the costs of satellite connectivity for those who don't already use it on their vessel. And a lot of that discussion is summarized in the report as well. So that's all I have for you this morning on the Term of Reference 3B report. I'd just like to thank the working group for all of the hard work they put into this process, and to our chair and vice chair for kind of steering us along as well. And with that, Mr. Chair, I am ready to take some questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bodell. I will open up to the council. Any questions on the 3B report presentation? Okay, I guess you did a very good job, Emily. So I believe there is a motion coming up related to the 3B report. Mr. Pearnock, I believe you have a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a motion, if you could bring it up. Okay, the motion is that the council accept the on-demand gear conflict working group's report on terms of reference 3B and confirm that the working group has completed all terms of references tasked by the council.
Could you pause for a second? Thank you, Sfathia. Mike, if you can start again from the beginning. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'd like to make a motion that the council accept the on-demand gear conflict working group's report on terms of reference 3B and confirm that the working group has completed all terms of reference as tasked by the council in October 2023. Need a second.
Thank you, Mr. Pearnock. Looking for a second. Jackie O'Dell. Rationale, Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The report and its recommendations meet the working group's charge from term of reference 3B. The working group has also addressed each term of reference as indicated in the report.
Thank you, Jack. Anything to add, Ms. O'Dell?
No, they completed their terms of reference, and I think we need to just have a discussion of where that goes from here. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. O'Dell. Discussion on the motion on the board from the council. Okay. Seems the group. Jeff Smith.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. I just want to speak in favor of the motion. I think that the working group did a lot of really good work, and that the report that they have put together is going to help this council in decision-making moving forward. So I think we should support this.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Any other comments on the motion on the board from the council? Mr. Pentney.
Thanks. So just to echo what Jeff Smith's comment, I think the on-demand gear working group accomplished a lot, had a lot of good conversations, and I also agree with Jackie O'Dell that I think, you know, before we move on, we should have a little bit of a conversation around what the council intends to do with the consensus statements that came out of the on-demand gear working group.
Thank you, Mr. Pentney. Seeing no hands, you know, I keep hearing that maybe we should have a discussion about that. I mean, this is an opportunity to maybe have a little starter discussion on some of the questions that's just come up. So I don't know if there's further discussion from council members about the 3B report and where it goes from here. Ms. Kearns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not necessarily to the motion, but in your materials, you have a letter from the commission, and the commission is requesting a delay in taking action on the framework itself. And we're asking for that delay to occur until June of 2026 in order to allow for additional outreach to the lobster industry.
Sorry, hold on, Tony. That's actually not yet about the framework in itself.
I didn't know if you wanted.
No, this is about the working group report. Okay. Like I said, there were some questions that maybe we want to have a discussion about where this report goes, but I don't see any other hands. But I will come back to you, Ms. Kearns, on your comments for sure. Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. Good morning. The motion here indicates that the on-demand working group has completed all of their task terms of reference. The working group has been working for 2 years on their terms, and so I appreciate that the council is considering this motion to have the working group complete its work. I think the question around next steps is certainly something later this morning when we start in our initial discussion about 2026 priorities is a place where we could talk about what the potential future of the working group is. But I also think, you know, there may be a different way to approach the next topic that we're going to get into, which is the gear marking framework that's not as council staff resource heavy on the workload. So I just wanted to note that. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. O'Keefe. Back to Mr. Pentney.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Just I leave it up to you whether you want to follow up on the specific consensus statements and recommendations from the gear conflict group, working group, or first dispense with this motion. But if you want to proceed with discussion, I have a couple thoughts to share.
Have at it.
All right. So just in reaction to the consensus statements and the discussion that the working group had, and I appreciate the slides up there. So consensus statement one talked about providing gear mark locations in real time. Then there was a follow-on slide that talked about various aspects of gear marking and visualization related to data sharing. What is real time? There was consensus statement number two that talked about vessels operating in areas have the technology to visualize gear, the economic potential economic impacts of that, equity concerns. And I think those were, you know, my takeaway from those discussions was the on-demand gear working group asking a lot of really good questions, raising a lot of important issues, and recognizing that the state of the technology development has certainly matured a lot over the last 5 years, particularly on the, you know, on the devices that allow the gear to be retrieved. But not as much work has been done on the visualization aspect, which is clearly the focus of the gear conflict working group. And so we've been talking at the regional office about how we can best, you know, respond to those consensus statements and the questions that the on-demand gear working group have asked, as well as other questions that we've heard. And we've been at this council, Mid-Atlantic Council, the Lobster Board, and a number of meetings that we've had with industry, or where we've been in attendance and meetings with industry. And so we are working now on preparing what's called a request for information. And it's basically a Federal Register notice that allows us to solicit input on a lot of these very important questions. And we would be soliciting input from a variety of stakeholders, including the people that are developing the technologies. Because a lot of the questions in terms of data standards, frequencies, are, and you know, the availability of information, how the gear works, how the gear interacts with the visualization components. Those are questions best answered by the people actually developing the technology. It allows us to engage more directly with the states and enforcement agencies in terms of their needs and desires. But it also allows us to then solicit information from the industries that would be affected, both fixed gear industries that might want to use the gear, as well as the mobile gear fleet that would need to be able to visualize the gear. And so if you, with your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, we are proposing to prepare that request for information. We expect it to be something where we would likely publish the notice in December, January, engage with the councils and the commission and the Lobster Board, and probably have a comment period open for 60 to 90 days to ensure that we bridge enough of the meetings for people to get a sense of what we're asking and provide information back. And then we would prepare a report based on the responses that we receive and present that back to the councils and the commission. Tony Kern suggested that the action that we're about to discuss next be delayed until June for more outreach. Just June may be possible, but it might be actually later if we want to get a full comprehensive report based on the request for information. So I know I'm sort of bridging two things. One is sort of our response to the consensus statements from the on-demand gear working group, but they do potentially have an impact on the next discussion related to the on-demand gear framework.
Thank you, Mr. Pentney. That's much appreciated, your input there. Yeah, sorry. Just to, on the motion, Mr. Smith.
Yes, it's on the motion. Well, it was to your question on what do we do with the consensus statements from the on-demand working group. And I believe, well, first I want to thank Mr. Pentney for the commitment to do that additional outreach. I think at a minimum what we should do is make sure that the consensus statements that the on-demand working group developed are shared with the agency to inform what they, the questions that they ask and the information that they seek to gain by doing the request for information process. So that's, you know, I don't see another place for those consensus statements to go right now other than into that process, unless we do something other than I think what we're going to do regarding the next topic. So I just want to make sure the work of the working group gets into the process that Mr. Pentney just described. Thank you.
I'm pretty sure it will, but thank you for that. Ms. O'Dell, on the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Jeff just took what I was going to recommend. But I also just wanted to thank Mr. Pentney for providing some more information of with you and your team for how you think you're going to move forward with this. And I also really appreciate that the request for information won't just be an opportunity for people to share what they think, but there will actually be a response on that from the agency, like a report back, so that you people will understand the information that was provided during that request for information and then how you've gone about thinking of how to respond to that, either through the council or through the commission for you know how you're going to move forward with that. I think the report back is just important as opening up the opportunity for people to provide information for the request for information. Thanks.
Mr. Pentney.
Yeah, I think just to that point, I think depending on the outcome of the next action, I think what we provide back to the councils will either be just sort of a summary of what we've learned and how we intend to proceed with that, or potentially information for the councils to consider if there is, in fact, as I've heard people talk about, a delay in the next action, then it could inform the final version of the gear marking framework if the council continue to pursue that.
Last up, Ms. Kearns on the motion.
I have questions about how the request for information will work, so I can wait until after we dispense with the motion, if that's your preference.
Thank you. So sounds like there's general happiness about what this report is, where it is and where it may be going. Do we have any opposition to the motion on the board? From the council. The motion on the board here, just so everyone understands, is that there was a working group. It put together a report, had a lot of outlines of where they were supposed to be going. This report has been completed. The report has been approved by the working group, and I'm just making sure that the council approves the working group report. This has nothing to do with the framework, which will be coming up next. So everyone on the council understands where we are. No objections to the motion on the board. Any abstentions to the motion on the board? The motion will pass with consensus. On to the framework. Mr. Pierdnock.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's up next is the alternative gear marking framework adjustment. We're going to turn it over to Ms. Potter and Ms. Murphy, I believe, from Garfo to make a presentation. Thank you.
All right. Hi, all. Ready to go?
When you are, Caroline.
All right. Thank you. Yep. So I'm Caroline Potter. I work in Garfo's Sustainable Fisheries Division, and I'm a co-lead on this action. Wish I was there in person, but Allie Murphy, who's the other co-lead, is in person today. So yeah, I'm just going to provide a quick update and summary of the action before your discussion. So next slide. Big picture, this action considers allowing alternative methods to mark fixed gear in the Greater Atlantic Region. Current fixed gear fishery gear marking regulations require surface markers like radar reflectors, pennants, high flyers, buoys. Those requirements would still exist. What this action is proposing is adding an additional method to mark gear. So fixed gear fishermen could continue to comply with current marking requirements, or instead use a gear marking alternative that does not have a physical surface marker. And the purpose of this is to allow the use of gear that does not have a persistent vertical buoy line, such as on-demand gear. Next slide. So this map is not depicting council fisheries, but I'm going to use it as a visual to talk about some of the implications for the action. So these are the lobster, Jonah crab, trout pot vertical line restricted areas, which may end up allowing gear marking alternatives if you proceed with recommending allowing gear marking alternatives in your fisheries. And I just want to use this map to explain that with regards to this action, when we talk about Atlantic Large Whale Take Reduction Plan, buoy line restricted areas, these may be the current restricted areas that are in place now, but the alternatives in this action are worded so that they apply to all restricted areas. So if areas, you know, are changed, modified, you know, the alternatives that you select would automatically apply to them. And it would apply to restricted areas, whether they be seasonal or dynamically managed or when and ropeless. So right now, for example, the Take Reduction Plan has fishery closures for gillnet fishing in a few areas, but they're not restricted areas. And hypothetically, let's say the Take Reduction Plan is modified so that those closures are turned into buoy line restricted areas instead. And if you selected an alternative that allowed gear marking alternatives in restricted areas, then they could be allowed in those modified areas in the future. Next slide. All right, so the action has two alternative sets. For alternative set one, alternative 1A is no action. Alternative 1B could allow alternative gear marking in the entirety of the Greater Atlantic region. Alternative 1C would limit the use of gear marking alternatives to Atlantic Large Whale Take Reduction Plan restricted areas, and only when those closures are in place. So it is spatially and temporally restricted. Alternative 1D would allow alternative gear marking in those closures, but would allow it all year, even when the restricted areas are not in place. So it's just spatially restricted. Currently, for alternatives 1C and 1D, there are no TRP buoy line restricted areas that apply to council fisheries. There are closures, but not restricted areas. So 1C and 1D would not increase fishing access for council fisheries at the moment. Currently, 1B would also not allow additional access to areas for council fisheries, but could allow the use of additional types of gear, such as on-demand rig fishing gear, that is currently only permissible under exempted fishing permits. When considering the geographical scope, these alternatives are describing the maximum extent of where gear marking alternatives could be allowed for use. But as part of the approval process, the regional administrator could put further restrictions on where they're allowed. And none of these alternatives supersede fishery closures. So if there's a fishery closure that stops all fishing operations, you know, using a gear marking alternative would not allow you to continue fishing, right? So it doesn't take precedence over other closures. Next slide. All right, so prior to gear marking alternatives being used, the regional administrator would need to approve them. They would be approved based on their functional equivalence to current surface markings. Because of that, the plan development team, fishery management action team, created a list of elements for things that should be considered when reviewing a request for approval. functional equivalence is not part of an alternative that you're considering, but because it's part of the process for determining which gear marking alternatives would be allowed for use, we've been describing them and seeking feedback on them throughout the development of this action. The difference between the two categories of essential and beneficial is that all gear marking alternatives would need to meet those essential elements, whereas the beneficial elements may be applied differently to different marking alternatives depending on specifics. So for example, timing, you know, as described here, we're saying real-time marking is highly beneficial. When gear goes into the water, people should be able to detect it. When gear is removed, marking should be removed. But throughout the development of this element, people have raised that requiring real-time marking in all situations, even in scenarios with low probability of gear conflict, is more restrictive than is necessary, at least right now, especially if we're serious about reducing cost of this type of system. So through the development of these elements, we've tried to maintain an appropriate amount of flexibility and consideration for a broad range of scenarios of where and how gear marking alternatives may be used in the future. And because these elements would be in the regulations, you know, we don't want to be overly restrictive and then later have to conduct another rulemaking to increase flexibility. Next slide. All right, so we thought it might be helpful to highlight some other approval processes at GARFO to illustrate how this approval process could work. So EVTR is probably the example that we're most closely modeling with what's envisioned for gear marking alternatives. EVTR regulations state that vessel trip reports must be submitted through a software application that has been approved by NIPS. In the regulations, there are details on when and what information must be submitted, but the regulations don't describe the approval criteria or process for the software applications. There is a NIMS website that lists approved software options, but for the software approvals, NIMS has guidance documents that describe the process that software developers should follow to apply and then be approved in order to offer the EVTR services. And this includes technical requirements, and GARFO even provides test trip data that the developer needs to use to test their software, and then they submit that for review to GARFO. All of that is detailed in these guidance documents, but not described in the regs. And then at the time of final submission for that joint EVTR action, there was a short list of approved software that could be used, but that approval process wasn't described in detail. Kind of the opposite approach was taken with VMS type approvals, where an incredible amount of detail is described in the regulations. So they describe the requirements on, you know, communication functionalities, data formatting and transmissions, latency, messaging, how forms are completed and updated, security, and more. Also, they state that the requester may have to provide to NIMS the equipment necessary to field test and conduct at-sea trials to demonstrate the unit's functionality. And then NIMS also maintains a website list of type approved units. For an entity seeking to provide monitoring services, so this includes observers, monitors, and electronic monitoring, it must apply and obtain approval by NIMS. An application is required to, you know, among other things, have a description of the applicant's ability to carry out the responsibilities of a service provider. And then these responsibilities are described in the regulations, and some of those things include requiring that the observers, monitors, and video reviewers meet certain educational and training requirements and meeting reporting procedures and data management. And then NIMS bases approvals on the completeness of the application and on a determination that the applicant can perform those described responsibilities. And then again, NIFS maintains a web page with approved providers. So how does the envisioned approval process for gear marking alternatives compare to these three examples? The idea is to explain that to be approved, the gear marking alternative would need to be functionally equivalent to current surface markings. And then the regulations would elaborate on this by describing the functional equivalence elements. And then any additional information and technical information would be provided in guidance outside those regulations. An intention with constructing it this way is that alternative gear marking is a developing technology, on-demand gear is developing, and we don't want regulatory text to stifle any sort of advancement or change. And things like the performance standards and technical and functional specifications for on-demand gear are currently being developed. And so because of this, gear marking alternatives would need to be able to, they would not be able to be used until the regional administrator approves them. And then that would not happen until more decisions are made about how the overall system of gear marking alternatives will work. Next slide. All right, so alternative set two. For this, 2A is no action. 2B would require a person to demonstrate knowledge of an approved gear marking alternative before use. And they would do that as part of acquiring a letter of authorization. So someone would apply for a LOA, and then in that process, they would complete an educational component before being issued the LOA and then being able to use a gear marking alternative. The purpose of 2B is to increase the accuracy of the location information. The framework document describes some examples that this could be modeled after. And then alternative 2C would require someone to obtain an LOA but not have to demonstrate that they know how to perform marking of any gear marking alternatives. An LOA could assist in management decisions and assist enforcement because it would then create a number and list of vessels authorized to fish with these alternative markings. Next slide. So information on impacts is provided in the framework document, which you'll have access to, but I'm just going to highlight a few things here. And I should mention that the framework doc, you know, it also includes consideration for impacts to the lobster fishery, and that's included in the summary table. All right. So the action is not expected to impact fishery resources or the physical environment. For protected species, there are a lot of potential positives and potential negatives depending on when and where fishermen decide to use alternative gear marking, and then any potential change in fishing behavior by other fishermen in response to fixed gear fishermen using those alternatives. But the largest factor for impacts to protected species is the changes to entanglement risk. Particularly for the North Atlantic right whale. In general, for protected species, fewer persistent buoy lines will reduce entanglement risk, and therefore alternatives 1B, 1C, and 1D could lead to reduced negative or lead to positive impacts for protected species. But as I mentioned before, there aren't restricted areas that apply to council fisheries, so there wouldn't be a difference between 1C, 1D, and no action for council fisheries. And then briefly for human communities, because the use of gear marking alternatives would be optional, we'd expect that only fishermen who could either make the same profit or could increase their profits would choose to use gear marking alternatives. And the negative impacts for set one here on this would be for fishermen if they purchased and equipped their vessels with technology to visualize markings. And so that's what that negative impact for human communities is showing. Next slide. All right, so I believe Emily will cover feedback in greater detail. So I only included a high level, kind of generalized list of some of the reoccurring topics of feedback that we received on this action. Some of the concerns were raised were on the fact that this action does not require gear visualization. It doesn't require fishermen to use alternative gear markings, and it also doesn't require fishermen to visualize gear marking alternatives. So just like vessels that aren't required to have radar, this action wouldn't require visualization technology. There were concerns about gear conflict. This action would not change the process for responding to gear conflicts. The process would be the same for on-demand gear as it has been for roped gear right now. When it comes to real-time and internet access, there are different ways to structure when and how gear markings would be shared, but most feedback that was received on this stressed the importance of real-time updates and access. We've heard different feedback on ghost gear. Some believe on-demand gear would lead to less ghost gear, and that's the intention, because it could be easier to visualize gear on a chart plotter, and you could find and retrieve displaced gear using acoustic communication. But we've also heard that people are concerned that if others are not using gear visualization tools, then there may be more gear conflict and then more ghost gear. There's been concerns about equity. So equity for access to areas, equity for who is able to acquire and use on-demand gear, and overall concerns about if fixed gear fishermen are allowed to use gear marking alternatives, what, would that be placing a burden on other fishermen, and how would those burdens be distributed across those other fishermen? Discussions have touched on trade-offs between cost and equity concerns and how people want on-demand fishing to work overall. And so we've heard a desire for accurate location marking, more accurate than using GPS surface marking. And so that would mean using something like acoustic localization to determine the bottom position of gear. But requiring this would increase cost. And we've also heard that grappling should remain an option for fishermen for a very low cost option. But on that, then we've heard concerns from enforcement about needing to grapple for gear. So we've had different perspectives on how people would balance reduced cost and increased access versus the higher end performance capabilities that on demand can technologically achieve, but at a higher cost. We've heard concerns about a lack of general awareness and engagement on this action, and concerns about the stepwise approach that was taken with this action and how it intentionally had a narrow focus. And some have expressed that they would prefer more of the decisions on an on-demand fishery, how an on-demand fishery would work to be presented with this action. And then this was often expressed with the opinion that an on-demand fishery running at full scale is not ready for implementation at the moment, and so decisions on this action should be paused. But overall, we've heard some say that they don't like the idea of on-demand, but then we've also continued to hear support for this action and its goal of providing an option for fixed gear fishermen to access areas that they would otherwise be closed out of. Next slide. So this is just the broad timeline that we've been using for this action, and I'll just highlight that 2026 NIMS intends to publish an RFI in the Federal Register on that broad range of topics in order to get public feedback on a wide range of questions pertaining to on-demand, like Mike Pentney was describing a few minutes ago. And so, you know, a lot of those items that I've said over time, oh, that's out of scope, those would be posed in that RFI, and that's currently being planned and developed. And so if there are specific questions that you would like included in the RFI, now would be a great time to let us know that. And, oh, last thing, almost forgot, happy National Lobster Day. And that's it for me.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Potter. I believe Emily has further information to add to the process. This is the AP input that we've received from our council input, council APs. So if you are ready to go, Emily.
I think my slides will be appearing shortly.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you all very much. Hello again, Emily Bodell. I'm back to share with you all some feedback that we received from various council-related groups as well as the public on the Joint Alternative Gear Marking Framework. Per some of the council discussion that was had in June on this topic and some suggestions to reach out to advisory panels, GARFO and council staff worked together to coordinate several presentations, including one for the on-demand working group, the scallop, groundfish and recreational, and monkfish and skate advisory panels, and as well as coordinating a public engagement session where the public was welcome to come and provide some feedback on the action. I'd like to thank Caroline Potter for coming and presenting to all of these different groups and to the working group, as well as the council APs and the public for providing this feedback. Today, I'll be providing an overview of the kind of commentary and feedback we received from each group. I'll note that no one group was asked to provide a preferred alternative, so you'll note that there is no preferred alternative for the action identified in your decision document that was in the council binder. I'll also note that we received quite a few public comments. Those are not summarized in this presentation, but they are made available on the on-demand working group's meeting materials under correspondence and then additional correspondence. So I'm just going to go in chronological order here by when the meetings were held. The first group to provide some feedback on the framework was the on-demand working group at its August 26th meeting. Some of the general feedback and feedback specific to alternative set one, there was a note that the action seems kind of vague and that the outlined approval process isn't public facing. We heard that there has been some lobster industry feedback that they're unable to comment because it's unclear how the process would work. And again, expressing those concerns that the process would be left to the regional administrator without a defined public aspect. Also echoing that there's not enough industry input on specific components. The working group, some members expressed interest in opening up fishing opportunities, but needed more clarity on the approval process and felt that the standards should be further developed kind of before moving forward. There was also maybe some hesitation around whether there is an immediate need to implement the action since gill nets can access lobster and Jonah crab vertical line restricted areas at this time, though it was noted that while current vertical line closures impact these fisheries, future take reduction team measures could pertain to council managed fisheries. There was also a suggestion that if more work needs to be done on this action, that it would be helpful to identify the key groups that would be appropriate to seek input from, including industry. Just a couple of comments on alternative set two. So kind of generally speaking, there was a comment that they needed more information on the implications of alternative set two, particularly the letters of authorization aspect on state fisheries, a note that kind of the regulatory or legislative process for states would also kind of need to take some time to move through. There was a feeling that the cost of the gear would motivate effective use, but also some opinions that a training or educational component would be beneficial and a suggestion that that might be able to be industry-based. But there were some comments that the working group would want to hear from industry on what would be beneficial for them for an educational requirement. I'll also note that we heard from a couple members of the public at this meeting. One comment felt that there was a lack of lobster representation in the discussions and suggested delaying the action until further input could be gathered. Another public comment supported some training on gear marking software itself. Immediately following the on-demand fishing working group meeting in Wakefield in August, we held a public engagement session. Caroline again came and provided a presentation on the framework, and we received 6 comments representing a couple of different sectors. So we had some folks from the lobster industry, an NGO representative, a state agency, and one commenter with no affiliation. There were a couple of comments in support of Alternative 1B and or Alternative 2B, noting that this alternative would create an opportunity to access vertical line closure areas and could allow for dynamic management, which might reduce the need for additional management measures down the line. They also noted that it offered the most benefit for protected resources. The commenter also suggested or supported additional outreach to the lobster industry. There was a note that this could allow fishing access to other areas, such as shipping lanes and ferry routes that have been impacted by gear conflicts. And then some support specific to Alternative 2B, noting that fishermen participating in gear marking research have benefited from some type of training program and that manufacturers should be encouraged to provide this training. We also heard some comments in support of either delaying final action and or selecting Alternative 1C as the preferred alternative. The recommendation to delay implementation was, again, to allow for more outreach to the mobile and fixed gear fisheries, and there was a suggestion to coordinate with ASMFC as well as states for that outreach. The comments in support of Alternative 1C were supportive of providing fishermen with fishing opportunities in these vertical line restricted areas if it's economically viable, but felt that it should be limited to closure areas. And there was another comment that Alternative 1C would allow the opening of some areas without encouraging industrialization of the fishery. Was also encouraged, or the commenter also encouraged mandatory use of virtual gear marking technology for fixed and mobile gear vessels, and felt that NOAA should be developing minimum standards for implementation to minimize gear conflicts. And lastly, we had a couple of comments that were not in support of the meeting or of the framework or didn't indicate a clear position. These comments expressed concerns about inequities due to the costs of gear. They felt that it may not be economically feasible for fishermen. Also concerns about gear conflicts, as well as who would take accountability for potential gear damage. They felt that it was premature to take action before visualization technology and enforcement considerations had been clarified. Also expressed concern that this could enable fishermen to fish undetected in other zones or states, and generally felt that there was a missed opportunity to engage fishermen in this regulatory process. Next, the Joint Groundfish and Recreational Advisory Panel for the Council was provided with a similar presentation. They expressed that there were, or discussed some of the impacts to both mobile and fixed gear fleets, noting that mobile vessels would need to see the gear and expressed that real-time data would be really important. They felt that some of these fleets were not aware of the potential ramifications, for example, potentially requiring visualization technology on mobile vessels. Some other commenters felt that the approval process should be public and needed more engagement overall from the public and fisheries and from other advisory panels. The group also expressed some concerns about lost gear, the cost of gear, as well as safety issues, noting that few mobile vessels inshore have internet connectivity, and so that would be a potential cost incurred. And there was also a suggestion that they need to equip and educate both the fixed and mobile gear fleets. And again, thinking about the responsibility and costs of incidentally damaged gear. A couple of comments specific to the recreational fishery, noting that not all recreational or charter vessels have satellite internet. There is some activity in these closure areas, but perhaps less than commercial. Also expressed some concerns with hooking into on-demand gear or alternatively marked gear while anchoring or drift fishing. They noted that they can see gear now and kind of drift accordingly to avoid interacting with this gear. And again, concerns about the cost of accessing data. Kind of overall, there were also some concerns about the timing of the action moving quickly. And again, questions about the urgency of moving forward with this action at this time. The scallop advisory panel met via webinar on September 12th, and they also provided some feedback. They highlighted the challenges of widespread Starlink connectivity, noting that some vessels don't have internet connection more than 10 nautical miles from shore, and greater data usage from Starlink can be expensive. They also felt that on-demand gear would need to be visible from more than 5 nautical miles away, noting that scallopers can make decisions on where to fish before on-demand gear would be viewable, and they would want to avoid concentrations of fixed gear. Also some concerns with liability around damaged gear as expressed by other groups, and some concerns that on-demand gear implementation is happening too quickly. The final group that provided comments here from the council were the Joint Monkfish and Skate Advisory Panels, who met on September 16th. Again, reiterating many of the concerns that were brought forward by other groups, these cost considerations and concerns specifically around the cost of satellite connectivity and data usage, as well as potential costs to the mobile fleet. They also noted that on-demand gear itself, it can be expensive. Again, this idea of lost gear, ghost gear, and gear conflicts coming up. Specific to some of the advisors commented specifically about gillnet gear, concerns about recovering that gear if gillnet strings were to move, or if there were to be some sort of malfunction with the on-demand gear retrieval. Again, thinking about these obligations for the mobile fleet, would there be a burden on mobile vessels to stay away from fixed gear? And there was also a concern that implementing this framework could make it easier for the take reduction team to implement closures. And I'll pass it back to Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Emily. And I just want to thank everyone in the audience here. You know, I understand there's a lot of interest in this one. I just ask you guys to be respectful. I know there's a little chatter in the back room, but, you know, I just want to be able to get through this so people can understand what we're trying to vote on. So I just want to make sure people understand. We do understand there is concern. We do want to hear your opinions, but we have a process that we need to go through. We will provide an opportunity for public comment once we get our actual motion up on the board. So just kind of information. We're going to go around the table here to have some questions back to Ms. Bodell or Caroline Potter online. And we will eventually bring up the motion once questions from the council are done, and then we'll provide an opportunity for the council to speak around, have discussion on the motion, and we will go out to the public comment. And as we get to public comment, I will outline a little more process so we make sure we get everyone's input that's here in the room and online. So I just want to make sure people are understanding. We do understand you want to speak, and we will make sure we will get to that at the appropriate time. So I will put this to the council right now. Any questions on the presentation, either from Emily Bodell or Caroline Potter? Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is more kind of to educate me and probably people in the room a little bit. And I'm also trying to marry up the comments that were made during the public comment or the solicitation for comments, as well as the current gear marking requirements. So you know, just thinking through the current gear marking requirements and possible alternatives, I'm just curious, under the existing provisions, is there a requirement to consider, you know, safety, liability, and economics within those? Or it sounded very much like it was more based on technology you know, approval of software and things like that. But it didn't seem like there were other criteria associated with it before approval would happen, or how that would even be in the analysis that was provided, I don't know if under human communities, if safety, economics, or liability is considered within that analysis for positive or negative effects. So I'm just curious, with all the comments that we've received, how do we consider that within our current gear marking requirements or in the analysis of what we're conducting?
I'm guessing
yeah,
this.
So,
oh, sorry. Is that no, to Caroline?
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Caroline.
Yeah, so a lot of things to unpack there. For the approvals, the approval process that's recommended here is in the regulations. Yes, if we go back to those functional equivalence elements, that is all that would be in the regulations is what's detailed there. But then there could be more additional guidance outside of the regulations. And because the intention was to be, okay, how can we be as flexible as possible? We don't want to restrict the further development because the systems aren't, not all those decisions about how the alternatives would work have been decided. And we wouldn't want to have to go back through another rulemaking to increase flexibility. But the cost considerations are being considered. They are in the framework document, which was posted with the materials for this meeting. And then safety at sea is definitely an important consideration, and it's regularly part of conversations. You know, it's the National Standard 10 of MSA, you know, so we're always thinking about it. And there's work being done towards increasing safety for these types of systems.
So it's a work in progress. Thank you.
Any further questions for the two presentations that we've received so far on the framework? Mr. Pierdnock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Potter. If you go to slide or page 9, you have the feedback and action, and you have a number of different points there. And, you know, as been discussed, a lot of these things are, or the results of what each one of these items are in flux, and it's not clear. Cost and care conflict and other issues. My question I have is Mr. Penney, you mentioned earlier how you're going to send out this notice and then we'll be able to respond to it. Is it going to address all these, or I almost get the impression that some of these, from a timing standpoint, because the technology may not be in place at this point, will not be possible to be addressed within that timeline? And if that's the case with the technology, at what point would that be presented to use a technology that cost-effective, doesn't deny access, is equitable, and so on, so the public could be able to comment on it? Don't understand the question.
If you could be a little more clear.
Could the visualization, the different apps to visualize, whether it is an app that is going to connect to the cloud via your phone, via a transducer that gives you real-time data, that's really what's behind that. So, yeah.
Mr. Pentney.
Yeah, I mean, I think to a certain degree, we're already starting to get the feedback that we would be also soliciting during the request for information. So, for example, there was a point that Emily just made that the Scallop AP indicated that they would like to be able to see the gear more than 5 nautical miles away so they can plan a tow. So that's useful information. That's one of the questions that we have been asking, is how far away should the visualization appear on the chart plotter or whatever the format is. I think you mentioned, you know, should it be something that can show up on your phone or a tablet or a computer? Those are questions that we would ask. How do people want to be able to see the gear if it's being used? What distance is away from the point? Is it important for various fisheries to be able to see the gear? I mean, there's a long list of questions that we're going to ask. I've got 2.5 pages of questions, basically, that we would be seeking input on, both from gear manufacturers themselves about what the capabilities are, what the capabilities are today, what they think the capabilities might be in 3 years, 5 years, as well as from various fisheries, both the users of the technology, on the users of the on-demand gear, and the other users that might interact with that gear or need to know where that gear is. They're all going to have information to provide that we would then bring back to the councils as a result of the request for information.
Follow-up, Mike.
No, thank you, Mr. Penney, for that clarity. So with that, is there at some point there would be a pilot to then test that in real use and to see the way it works and whether there's gear conflict or interaction or so on?
Mike.
Well, we could go into a lot more detail. We've been issuing EFPs for 5 years. So the pilots are already occurring and have been occurring for a number of years under a variety of exempted fishing permits through the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, the state of Maine, and others that have exempted fishing permits to try the gear. Initially, the EFPs were focused solely on the effectiveness of the retrieval systems. How well do they work? How reliable are they? How complicated it is to set the gear, haul it, reset it. Now we're migrating into EFPs that are still testing that aspect of it, because I think there's still a lot of room for improvement there, but also focused on the data visualization, the geolocation aspects as well. So those EFPs have been ongoing for several years. We've got a lot of good results, I expect them to continue for several years until something happens where we no longer need exempted fishing permits for people that want to use the gear to be able to use the gear.
Now, thank you for that clarity. I think it helps a lot of people in the audience, too, of what we've been up to and where we're going. Thank you.
Ms. Kearns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike, I appreciate the service going out for this RFI, and the long list of questions will be enlightening to see. I also am concerned, though, that the industry still will not understand what the process is behind approval of different gear types and how we would move forward if the framework is adopted. And I think that understanding that process in order to answer the questions that you are going to put out will be very important. And I know that we keep talking about this is a two-step process. First do this, and then we'll figure all those pieces out. But those pieces are very clearly needed all together. And so without being able to know that, we're concerned that even if you have the answers to some of the questions, we would still not know how we could stop this process moving forward if the industry is not in favor of whatever report you guys end up putting out in the end. And then on the other side of it, just while I have the mic, the commission is really concerned about some of the alternatives, specifically 1B and 1D that are in the document, because they are a much wider area than what NOAA has been putting out on the ropeless roadmap and the impacts that it has on all industries. And it's a big concern for us at the commission and the lobster industry. And so I don't know if some of the questions could try to get at why those options are being considered as they are inconsistent with the ropeless roadmap messaging.
Mr. Petnick.
Yeah, thanks, Sonny. So to your first question, I'm looking at the draft list of questions that we would be including in, and this is the first draft of the list of questions and issues that we would be addressing in the RFI. And it actually has a section about the roles and responsibilities for the approval process. What should be included in the council action and implemented through federal regulations, what authorities should be left to the regional administrator, what standards could be left to the technology providers, and so on and so forth. So I think your question about what the process would be for approval is one of the things we're going to be soliciting input on in that request for information. to your question about the options, the area options, I think that's because it's a council action and there were pros and cons that were considered initially in terms of should it be solely constrained to the areas that are currently gear restricted areas under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, you know, take reduction plan, where this would just provide an alternative to fish in those areas when you would otherwise be prohibited from fishing, or could it be more broad, you know, broadly considered? And I don't want to speak for the councils in terms of why those alternatives were included, maybe just to provide a range of options. I know at one point there was a comment that if someone makes the investment to purchase the on-demand gear, they don't want to be limited to using it only in those times and places. They might want to be able to use it in other times and places. So those are trade-offs that the council should consider if it's going to select one of those alternatives. You know, I could give you my personal input on what I think it should be, which would be the more limited approach, but that's not for me to decide, for the council to decide.
Ms. Kearns?
Thank you. One more follow-up. In terms of how NOAA will do the RFI and try to make sure that they are soliciting feedback from the right individuals, or from all the individuals, will you be sending letters or emails to permit holders? And I'm going to specifically ask about lobster permit holders because that's the industry that I'm here today representing for the commission. But we're, you know, the commission itself, while we are happy to engage and help the with this process, we do not have access to the federal permit holder list. And so we can't make sure that those individuals are getting these questions. And I also would just put in a plug for perhaps some public meetings about these questions, because some of these questions might be complicated and industry may not be sure exactly what you're trying to get at. And public hearings might be helpful for these questions. I know that sounds a little bit odd, but it may be necessary. And it would be great if they are complicated that the service is able to do some public hearings for them.
Mr. Pentney?
I mean, I think to your first point about, you know, including that we're making sure we're sending out to all permit holders, I think that's, you know, that's a reasonable point. We do that often with part of our announcement of actions. We have email blasts that go out and notices to the public and permit holders that go out for sometimes for proposed rules, always for final rules. We could do something very similar and very broad for the request for information so that everybody who should be aware of it is aware of it. As to whether we can hold public hearings, I think that's something that we'll have to go back and see what our budgets would support, see what the timing might be, and see what the opportunities may be for that. We could certainly, you know, and we intend to talk about this in conjunction with already planned meetings of the council, lobster board, commission, and others. We could certainly look for other opportunities as they may present themselves.
Ms. Kearns?
Sorry, last one. I hope you seek out these other opportunities because I don't necessarily think council and commission meetings are your best place for outreach to industry.
Thank you for that, Ms. Kearns. Ted Platts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Mike and Tony, for those questions. I think they address a lot of the concerns here in this room and considerations, and with that, I would offer to make a motion if the council wants to receive that. I move that the council postpone final action on the alternative gear marking framework until additional information on ropeless gear and visualization technology as solicited through the National Marine Fisheries Service request for information is available to inform stakeholder input and council decision making. And if I have a second, I'll give a rationale.
Jeff Smith, are you seconding the motion?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead with your rationale, Ted.
Yeah, I just think the presence in the room here today is a testimonial to the fact that more voices need to be heard. You know, we're looking at sort of sea change, even if in the most limited scope of the way we're managing gear markings on the ocean. And to undertake such a major change requires serious and significant input from the industry. And unfortunate as it is, it seems that we have not gotten the industry input that we need. And so I'm all for creating the process that will allow that.
Anything else to add, Mr. Smith? While I appreciate the enthusiasm around this, we would like to make sure this motion gets its full debate, and I thank you for your enthusiasm. Mr. Smith?
I don't have any additional rationale. I think Ted summed it up well. I do have some comments on the motion, but...
Thank you for that. So just to remind again, we will go through council around the table, comments, discussion on the motion. I will go out to the public. You will have your opportunity to speak. So I just want to make sure people understand we want to have the discussion here at the table first to make sure everyone here understands where the council is thinking. And, you know, I'll just go with that. So comments from the council. I see Ms. Griffin.
Yeah, I don't want to take up too much time giving my support for this motion, because I'd rather hear from those that have taken the time to show up today. There's obviously been so many questions that remain unanswered, not just for the lobster fixed gear, but for hire fishermen, the scallop industry, you know, trawl, all practically every gear that we manage through the council or through ASMSC. And I think the fact that NIMS is willing to go out with an RFI is great, but the fact that they have already 2.5 pages of questions just speaks to the fact that this is appropriate to postpone at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Jeff Smith.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I mentioned in seconding the motion, I will be supporting this motion to delay action on the framework today, but I do want to be clear that I do support this council eventually approving an alternative gear marking framework. I just don't think that we are ready to do that today. It's been pretty clear to me that on-demand gear can reduce entanglement risks and provide additional opportunities for fishermen to fish in areas that they otherwise wouldn't be able to do so. You know, Mike had mentioned there's been a lot of testing of this gear over the last 5 years. I think the results have been pretty impressive, with like 16,000 deployments and a 90% success rate on retrievals. So I think we've shown that gear can work for fixed gear fishermen who choose to use it. But I believe we need to make sure that it also works for mobile and fixed gear fishermen who don't choose to use it. And that's why I'm supporting this delay. I'm pretty uncomfortable with this council pre-approving alternative gear marking regulations without having more detail on what those regulations are going to actually look like and how they're going to address the important issues raised by the working group around the definition of real time and visualization and data management. So that's why I'm supporting this delay today. I appreciate the agency, their plans to do the RFI. And frankly, I think that this council should continue to have its alternative gear working group continue to meet during that time so we can have these conversations moving forward. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. And let's be a little more concise on our comments. We got a whole group here that would like to speak, but I appreciate your input, Jeff. Ms. Zobel and then Jackie O'Dell.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And I will keep this brief, I promise. I'm in support of the motion. You know, while this is intended to be an initial step, it's clear that we have many unanswered questions, and particularly the visualization technology just isn't there yet. It's also clear from the feedback and the comments that we received that there are not only concerns, but confusion around the issue and surrounding the framework in particular that warrants direct public outreach to the most impacted fishery, which is the lobster fishery. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Zobel. Jackie O'Dell, then Megan Ware.
Okay, I'll be briefer. I'm in full support of this motion. We're not ready for it. There's a lot of unknowns, and I completely agree with everything that Tony mentioned in terms of making sure that the request for information is done as thoughtfully as possible and provides as many opportunities, such as public hearings, for the industry to get involved. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jackie. Megan Ware, and then Mr. Pierdenock.
Thanks. Probably no surprise here. I am going to support the motion. I appreciate Ted making it.
I think we really need to focus on engagement and collaboration on this topic. Unfortunately, I think there's kind of an untenable situation that's been created by applying the council's decision to the lobster fishery, and that's resulted in really limited outreach and a lot of confusion. So I think we need to work on that. And then I do think we have time for a delay. Thinking just of the species we manage as a council, those closures are closed to fishing. They are not closed to persistent buoy lines. So irrespective of what action we take here, those folks would not be gaining access anyway. We would need another TRT rulemaking. So that gives me confidence that we have time to do a little bit better on this. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Ware. Mr. Perdnak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm in support of this motion. I mean, it's been an ongoing evolution and process as a result of the timeline and the attempt to achieve the technology that would make this work. So I think we need to step back, take a little bit more time, and make sure we clear things up and there's adequate participation by the rec for hire and fixed gear as mobile gear, as well as mobile gear types. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Perdnak. Is there anyone else from the council who would like to speak to the motion on the board? Mr. Rule.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For all the reasons mentioned earlier, this is the stance of the MID, too. We feel that it's moving too fast. The amount of questions are definitely outweighing the answers we have at this time, so we can support the motion to suspend.
Thank you, Mr. Rule. Any other comments from the council around the table? Seeing none, so I would like to outline how I would like to proceed on public comment. While I would love to have you all have an opportunity to speak, we are somewhat limited in space and time here. So what I would like to first do is if there's any elected officials in the room, whether it's local, state, or federal, or anyone that is tasked to speak on behalf of them, I would like to call them to the mic first.
Jerry?
Jerry, are you on speaking on behalf of NEFSA or on behalf of a elected official? Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Greg Berg, I'm Mayor of Gloucester. The motion on the floor right now is very encouraging. I think it was said over and over that this is not ready for prime time. As you can see from this overflow crowd here, that I think that they're in agreement that it's not ready for prime time. Our lobster fishery is very important to Gloucester's economy, and I think that putting this in place now would really be detrimental to the industry and to the livelihoods of many people. So I would urge you all to vote in affirmative for this motion before you, because it needs a little more study and a lot more real life examples of how it can work, or see what the bugs are, because we're just not ready for it, folks. So that's all I will say. Please vote yes for this motion before you.
Thank you, Mayor Verga. Is there any other elected officials in the room or their designees? Okay, not seeing any. So how I would like to go through this, I would like to understand, are there folks in the audience that would like to speak on behalf of the motion? Are there people in the audience that would like to speak against the motion? Okay, so what I would like to do is give up fair opportunity across the board for those that are opposed to the motion versus those that are for the motion. Didn't see many hands going up, but I think those people are a little tentative of raising their hands. So I will go with Dr. Fuller first. And we are only doing 2 minutes comments, so we can make sure we can get as many comments as in we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Erica Fuller, I'm a member of the Atlantic Large Whale Take Reduction team and the Council's On-Demand Working Group. At a recent hearing, I provided testimony in support of Alternative 1B, but since delay seems inevitable, I'd like to provide some additional comment and ask one question for discussion if there's time. First, everyone in the room should be honest about what this framework does and does not do. It does not advance new regulations. It simply removes regulations requiring surface gear markings in federal fisheries. It does not require anyone to fish with on-demand gear all the time, everywhere. That's never been the goal of this action or any other action. It's completely consistent with the administration's agenda to remove regs and increase fishing opportunities using innovative fishing technologies. And it provides needed flexibility when there's a situation like last January where we had 90 whales feeding in Jeffrey's Basin at a time of year we didn't have a closure, or if a right whale were to become entangled in gillnet fishing gear, a fishery not protected by the current pause. In the 5 years I've been involved, there's been a tremendous amount of progress, but it has been slow to get socialized at the council. The working group was a great start. Through the Science Center's pilot project, 16,000 hauls in the regular course of fishing achieved a 94% chance of success. Much data is now getting transmitted in real time using Starlink and an Iridium satellite service. Gear from all manufacturers can be visualized free on EarthRanger, and significant progress has been made in the ability to show on-demand fishing location using a vessel's current chart plotter. Advances have been made in the development of a universal deck box to deploy gear from multiple manufacturers, which was a big ask of enforcement, and meaningful conversations about how this data can be shared and to whom are occurring. Unfortunately, from the perspective of someone who's worked to develop feasible options, there appears to be a campaign of misinformation designed to delay progress and miss the December 31, 2028 deadline. Truth is, no one is being saddled or forced to use this gear. It is a tool in the toolbox, a chance to adapt if you
want. Thank you, Dr. Fuller.
Continue fishing if you don't. Thank you.
So, someone from the lobster fishery, I would appreciate. Arthur Sawyer, please.
Yeah, thank you. My name's Arthur Sawyer. I'm the president of Massachusetts Lobstermen's Association. I probably represent most of the lobstermen in this room. I'm a little disappointed in that we're going to kick this down the road because we brought all these guys here today to try to end this. The Mass Lobstermen's Association is 100% against buoyless fishing, and I don't see that's going to change by any new data that's going to be collected. I hope the new administration that's in place in this country right now gets wind of this. This is probably the worst possible thing that's ever happened to the lobster industry. Here we are on Lobster Day, and we're talking about the reduction of the lobster industry down to what level, I have no idea. It's going to be rich people and corporations. This idea that buoyless fishing is going to do something that the lobster industry wants is completely foolish. It's not going to happen. Nobody wants it, and the cost is so unbelievably high. It didn't even get mentioned here today. I sat here listening to this for the last 2 hours, whatever the time is. The economics of this whole thing is completely insane. Do you realize it's going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars to outfit the lobster industry with buoyless technology, even if it's only $2,000 a buoy? The range is $2,000 to $4,000. I wanted the vote to be here today, hopefully, to end this. But now we're just going to kick the can down the road. And you guys got to realize you're going to have to come back and listen to this whole show again some other time in some other city, and it's probably going to be longer than the show we just listened to today. Thank you. We don't get paid for that.
As I said, I appreciate the enthusiasm. I wish we can hold off on applause so we can actually get the comments on the table as people want to present them. Are there any other folks that would like to speak in favor of this motion? On behalf of an environmental community.
Colleen Coogan, resident of Massachusetts, not on behalf of an environmental community, but informed by my previous work with NOAA Fisheries, I retired May 1st. I just want to really address the misinformation. I think that Erica did hit some of it. The action that we're talking about today is specific to gear marking, doesn't speak to gear retrieval alternatives. To my knowledge, nothing in the council's FMPs dictate what methods fishermen must use to retrieve their fixed gear, allowing them to use the techniques that best fit their vessels and their fishing operations. And the technology is nearly ready, and you know, as council members, you've heard a lot of it on the on-demand working group. We heard about it, and it's been presented to the ASMSC board. That indicates that right now, all digitally marked gear locations upgraded EarthLink can be detected in real time within 5 miles of virtually marked trawls on commonly used commercial chart plotters, including Time Zero, and that's in the process for Olex and for Raymarine. Neither virtual gear marking or charred platter detection capability would be mandatory. Fishermen without satellite connectivity will likely incur costs, however. And based on the information presented to the on-demand working group in 2023, 200 to 300 vessels have fished in the take reduction plan seasonal closure areas in 2021 and 2022. A subset of these likely do not currently have satellite access, and the cost to those vessels should be evaluated and compensation mechanisms should be identified. Finally, while the economic impacts should continue to be evaluated, there are positive impacts that should be acknowledged. We do hear from lobster fishermen that have been shut out of their fishing areas for years, particularly in Massachusetts, that do want access to this, and they are among the people testing this for us now. This action removes one barrier to the possibility that they would have an opportunity to fish in their area. I also think that this could contribute to dynamic management in a way that will reduce future costs, in that it might demonstrate that no further measures will be needed under the take reduction plan. Thank you very much, and I appreciate all the people who are here to speak.
Thank you. I will be taking care of people's time periods. I don't need assistance from the audience. Thank you very much. I would like to hear from another representative from the industry, and that would actually would like to hear from someone from a non-lobster industry right now. Obviously, this will affect some of our groundfish industries, our monkfish industries, so I'd like to hear someone from constituents from actual the species that we manage. I see Al Catone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the motion on the board. And I appreciate what Suki said earlier about having to come back and do this again, because I can give you the mobile gear side of this. I don't believe that you can see these things from 5 miles. I'm participating in an EFP right now, and I've yet to see a buoy because I don't have Starlink. I just have it hooked up to a GPS. And to be perfectly honest with you, I can't afford Starlink. And if we're going to increase any of the buoys, the ropeless gear out there, outside of these EFPs, you're going to have to equip not just every mobile gear fisherman, but wreck fishermen, anybody who's in contact with the bottom, with technology to see these buoys. And that cost is going to be incredibly astronomical. So until we have funding secured to make that a reality, I think we're all just wasting our time here. And I'm talking about party charter people who work the bottom, you know, the hooks on the bottom, anchors on the bottom, the scallop fishery, the mobile gear fishery. Every single vessel has to be outfitted with the technology to see these buoys. And when you run into a buoy, like myself, I fish alone. If I'm in contact with lobster gear, it's a harrowing experience. And in some instances, it could be life-threatening. But if I'm in an area where I don't see a buoy until it's too late because the technology isn't right, and I have a wreck on one side, or I have a possibility of being entangled with another dragger on the other side, I'm going to run over the lobster gear because that's the safest option. So until this technology on the reception end of it is up to snuff, I really think we're wasting our time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Catone. Is there any non-industry comments that would like to be? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for allowing me to comment. My name is Regina Rasmita Silvia. I'm a longtime member of the Atlantic Large Whale Take Reduction Team, the Atlantic Disentanglement Network, and I run a stranding program as well under authorization of NOAA. I just wanted to clarify some things. We are involved in the EFP in the Northeast. Our intention is never to have this gear used by anybody who doesn't want to use it in any places that isn't authorized. It's been very much set in the restricted areas. We have heard the concerns from the industry, and we take them very seriously. We just completed a safety measure on one of the retrieval apps to have a man overboard option that will allow the gear to immediately surface. That's now functioning on Trap Tracker. We are working now on an alert system that would help, we hope, with the mobile concerns as well with safety. And not unlike me getting a message that there's an accident 5 miles ahead of me here, and to take an alternative route This would provide a mechanism to alert the vessels at least 5 miles away that they were coming into a gear field. So we take these concerns seriously. I just wanted to clarify that we did support the initiative just to reduce further regulatory burden moving forward, but there is no intention, at least on our behalf, to ever have this gear used by anybody who doesn't want to use it. Thank you.
Thank you for comments. I'm looking for a comment from the lobster industry. Another comment from the lobster industry.
I'll go.
Please state your name and your affiliation. Thank you.
My name is Eric Moschino. I'm a lobster fisherman. I got a lot to say about this, but first I would like to respond to a comment by, I believe, Dr. Fuller about being honest. She's come to us in this position of assumed authority, telling us that we're not honest. And then they tell us their intention is to not have us use this gear. But we have closures that there's really no scientific evidence to have these closures. We have a very simple, very elegant system to reduce these entanglements. We have the 1,700-pound breakaways. We know they work. We've seen it. We had biologists film it from a whale watch boat when a juvenile humpback got entangled. This is nonsense. It will immediately put out of business at least 90% of our boats. It's way too expensive. We got all you unelected officials sitting up here who will bear no consequence from this. We're going to eat this. What are you going to do? Would it be fair if we got to destroy your income and your lifestyles? I don't think so. And I don't think you should be doing it to us. This whole thing should be tabled. It's a nightmare.
As I said, I appreciate the enthusiasm here, but I would really ask you to refrain from the applause. This is disruptive to the process, and I really don't understand why you're not expecting to get out of this. I'll go to Vito Giacalone, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. We hope that there's, at a minimum, a delay of this, especially we put in a letter in correspondence on this issue. Trawlers have legal liability under Magnuson. It's a direct impact. Al gave a good idea of what happens on shorthanded day boats. It's, without that visual, it's of seeing a buoy. There's only so many things a captain can pay attention to. But on behalf of the offshore trawlers with multiple men on board, I'm sure nobody wants to disparage their crew, but the chance of having crew that these guys would want to have at the wheel for 2 or 3 or 4 hours straight, unattended, gets less and less as the fishery becomes more difficult for people to make a future of ground fishing. So for mobile gear guys, you're not going to have someone 24/7 at the wheel, that same human being, even though they got one eye open. Having another screen to look at with no visual is going to be a real difficult thing to add to it. There's going to be impacts. Let me make clear, no mobile gear fisherman wants to go through a fixed gear, guys, for both, both fisheries. It's bad for the trawler, and it's bad for the lobsterman. But we have the legal exposure, so I hope that a delay occurs and that additional analysis is done to see, do we have the manpower and do we have the electronics in place to expect the mobile gear fleet, who's liable, to monitor that gear properly to protect the fixed gear guys from getting damaged. So, I think we're all arm in arm on this, is that it's not time yet.
Thank you for your comments. I just want to point out that people should be speaking to the motion on the board, which is the motion to delay the framework. Are there any non-industry folks that would like to speak again? Yes, please. The woman in the back. Sorry, sir. The woman in the back.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Catherine Lin. I work in education, and I just wanted to share some of the interest and excitement that I've heard as we go into local high schools and teach about on-demand fishing. At schools, we always start by talking about the history and economic importance of lobster fishing, and then we talk about the issue of accidental entanglements of right whales, and we ask students to consider what possible solutions there are to address this issue, always emphasizing that any solution to prevent accidental entanglement must also sustain our lobster fishing industry. So I just wanted to share that it's been really interesting to see high schoolers we talk to get really excited about the possibility of on-demand fishing. These are young people who have grown up with technology, and they're embracing it as a solution. And a lot of these kids, they also fish themselves, and they're excited to try the gear. So I actually have a lot of time left to yield back, but I just wanted to share that excitement for the possibility of having this option for on-demand gear. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Go back to the lobster industry, and I apologize for the contingent behind me. Is there anyone behind me that would like to speak on behalf of the motion on the board?
Morning. My name's Paul Terrio, lifelong commercial fisherman. I want to start by reiterating what Jackie said. She just left, but she brought up safety and economics. And I don't have time to go to meetings, you know, every month. And I just found out about this meeting 2 days ago, which is pretty poor. But how come safety isn't mentioned? Nobody cares. Nobody gives a shit about our safety, and that's pretty sad. And the economics are just, as Sookie said, it's mind-boggling what it would cost us to rig one boat. You're talking transducers, buoys, the floats. You have to reconfigure some of the gear. It's a nightmare. To say this is not well thought out would be an understatement. I'd also like to bring up Ms. Griffin's point. She mentioned some of the user groups that are going to be affected by this. And it's not just lobstermen, scallopers, and draggers. It's everyone. Tuna boats are going to get anchors caught in the gear. Recreational jig boats. Everyone's got to deal with this. So that just makes the economics tenfold. And my last point was to Jeff Smith. He mentioned high retrieval rates. Well, that's good when you're fishing in 5 fathoms of water in a closed area with virtually nobody around you. That's like giving 10 people a vaccine and saying, oh, it worked. This doesn't need to be tabled. It needs to go away. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments, Mr. Terrio. Ms. Church, is this for the fixed gear sector? Okay. Just non-lobster, please. Thank you.
Good morning, Aubrey Church, Cape Cod Commercial Fishermen's Alliance. We support the motion on the table. Our concerns center on safety, on cost, on operability. For mobile gear vessels, real-time visualization of gear location is not only essential to avoid interactions, but also imperative for safety. This requires specialized applications and steady data connections, both of which impose new costs. Many vessels, particularly limited access general category IFQ scallop boats, do not have offshore internet capability, such as Starlink. Without reliable visualization, scallopers cannot safely avoid concentrations of fixed gear, and the timing of pings alone does not provide enough distance to react and to do it safely. At the Joint Monkfish and Skate Advisory Panel meeting, I am both a member of the AP for both of those, as well as vice chair. AP members raised serious concerns about gear conflict and ghost gear if gill nets were to be parted. These are important considerations that must be addressed. Finally, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission has formally requested delaying final action until June 2026, and we agree with this timeline. It's necessary to allow for better outreach, fuller engagement with a variety of stakeholders before moving forward. For these reasons, we support the motion on the table. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. The gentleman in the pink maroon sweater. Okay. Thank you. Name and an affiliation, please.
My name is Paul Lundberg. I am a former president of the Gloucester City Council. But in my business career, I worked in the railroad industry, and there are two things that we always, and we are a very heavy regulated industry, there are two things that are extremely important. One is any regulation must take into account the economics of the business, and any regulation must contribute to the safety. These regulations have done neither so far. So the motion should be passed because this is not ready for consideration except from the constituents who are lining this room. They need to be heard from. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. The gentleman in the green. Yes, yes, you, sir. Sorry.
Do I need a microphone?
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Jim Bartlett, longtime lobster fisherman out of Beverly, Mass. I agree with Sookie, this shouldn't be voted on. It should be put away forever. And I don't know how many of you people on this council have ever read the Noah Oppenheimer report that was hired. He was hired by the state to do a two-year report on ropeless fishing. If any one of you ever read this, you wouldn't be sitting here today. It's over. It will not work. The economic impact is unbelievable. People think the government's going to pay for it. The government couldn't pay for your lunch. They're not going to pay for this. Thank you.
Thank you for comments. Is there anyone else in the room that is a non-fishing industry member? I will go back to, is there any non-lobsterman, fisherman that would like to comment? Jerry Lehman.
As of Jerry Lehman, New England Fishermen Stewardship Association, as a lot of you have heard today, these gentlemen in the room, nobody believes in the ropeless buoys. I mean, I will say yes to the action today, but this should be thrown out altogether. Fixed gear fishermen, ropeless fishermen have been fishing in coexistence for years. This is going to cause more derelict gear, more problems than we've ever managed. I can specifically think about the 700 line off the Cape. You got HMS Fisheries, recreational fishermen, trawlers, scallopers, all working the same bottom, within a quarter mile of each other. Again, anchoring systems will take gillnet gears, slide them in. Who pays for these things? Nobody talks about this. These are costs that come to everybody. These are self-proprietary businesses. They're small businesses. These costs are burdensome. It's bad enough that people are today with the regulations are living paycheck to paycheck. This is going too far. If I go fishing for 10 days, I'm going to have to buy Starlink, which comes at another subscription to my vessel. I'm already subscribing to VMSs and everything else at the same time. This is just another taxation, an unburdensome taxation on fishermen. We're already struggling. This is just, you know, another nail in the coffin. For years, we've been saying, you know, we'll just keep pushing on. But this is coming to a point where I was hoping that an action of 1A would happen today, but if this is the best we can get, I will support it for today. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Oh. I would like to go online. We have a few hands online. I have Kristen Kahn online. If you could state your name and affiliation, thank you.
Hi, my name is Kristen Kahn, and I am a biologist with NOAA Fisheries. But I want to be clear that I'm speaking today actually in a personal capacity, sharing my own perspective, not on behalf of NOAA Fisheries. I want to make sure that everyone in the room understands that on-demand fishing gear positions from all manufacturers can already be viewed at no cost through the Earth Ranger buoy app. All that's required is an internet connection. That's why I'm a bit puzzled by some of the comments suggesting that visualization is prohibitively expensive or that little progress has been made. In fact, there's been significant work on visualization by Earth Ranger, the Ropeless Manufacturers Working Group, and the gear manufacturers themselves. I recognize that not all fishermen have internet access, but it's really important to remember that the use of on-demand technology is being discussed specifically for closures in areas where and when whales are present, not everywhere. Most people want to see both North Atlantic right whales and lobster fisheries thrive, and it's in our collective best interest to make it possible for fishermen to continue fishing even during these closures. To do that, we really need to come together and coordinate on advancing this technology. Without progress, we risk being forced into a false choice between whale protection and fishermen's livelihoods. This technology offers a true win-win, but only if we commit to moving it forward. Many of the concerns raised reflect differences of opinion or implementation challenges, issues that have been acknowledged and debated for years. None of them are insurmountable, but what's needed now is the willingness to make decisions so that the work can
advance. Thank you for your comments. I will go next to Jason Joyce online.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Sorry. Yes, hello? I can. Sorry, Jason.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I'm a lobster fisherman from Swans Island, Maine. I'm also a board member of NEFSA. Appreciate Jerry being there today. What I'd like to highlight is I have listened to some comments that said that there were 16,000 hauls with a 94% chance of success on what they have for technology there now. That means there's 960 failures of deployment. Now, you take that 960 failures of deployment out of those 16,000 hauls, a lot of those are in shallow water. So what is the environmental impact? That is what is concerning me. Ghost gear, the impact of more ghost gear on the bottom, because not only are these unable to be retrieved because of failures, but you've got ropeless people sitting on top of each other. You've got fixed gear guys that can't see that don't have the technology that would be sitting on top of them. You have the mobile gear that would be going through. So I think the report that the lady gave, it showed on the report that there was zero environmental impact on all these decisions. I question that, because I think there will be a huge environmental impact. And as was stated by the fellow named Suki, I appreciated it. I support this postponing. But Judas Priest, it's hard to get together and go to these things, and all we're doing is we're postponing the inevitable. The industry will not support this. Technology is not there, and that's all I have to say, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Joyce. I will go to Gib Brogan online.
Good morning. Can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, I can.
Great. Good morning. Thank you. I'll get broken with Oceana. I've been following the council now for a little over 20 years and seen a lot of different processes come through the council, both the elaborate ones and the more discreet actions. And I've seen time and time again that the elaborate open-ended processes turn into snowballs and they take years. The discreet management actions from the council, like what's in front of you today, are far more likely to make the changes that are necessary to fishery management actions. The motion to delay, the vague motion to delay that's put out there, coupled with the loose timeline that was laid out by the regional administrator for the request for information and the follow-on, this describes a process that's going to go on well into 2026 and likely into 2027. And I think that the council should amend this motion first and foremost, if you're going to move forward with this, to put a firm set of guardrails on the timing of this process, to put it in context for the 2028 final rule that's required, that the council should make sure that this is lined up and will deliver what needs to be done. We are opposed to this motion that's in front of you today. We believe that the discrete action that was described by the Fisheries Service and laid out in slide 12 of the Fisheries Service's presentation shows that this is a limited scope action. There will always be other questions and issues that may be significant. And those can be addressed at a future date, but we need to take action now to allow this tool to be moving forward to provide access to these otherwise closed areas. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I will go to Patrice McCarron online.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Hi, Patrice McCarron. I'm the executive director of the Maine Lobstermen's Association. We've already submitted a couple of letters outlining our concerns. I just want to be clear that for Maine lobstermen, alternative gear marking does mean ropeless fishing, and that is a major concern. Our specific concern with the framework is the timing and the lack of outreach to lobstermen. So before any action is taken, we strongly believe that NIMS must do some real outreach with lobstermen to understand the issues and work together on a path forward. So we just want to lend our voice support to Suki and Tony Kearns and Megan Ware and all of the other industry representatives and urge you not to advance this framework. Thank you.
Thank you for comments. I have two more comments online. Ron Smolowitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ronald Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund, which represents the majority of the scallop fleet. We're certainly for postponing this, but I just want to mention that I've been involved with lobster trap research going back to the 70s and with whale reduction work going back to the 90s before it was much interest. There are many alternatives to reduce the injury and mortality as required by the Marine Mammal Protection Act. It doesn't say reduce entanglements. It says reduce injury and mortality. There are options such as the weak line breakaways, time tension releases, that would not require major changes to fishery operations and management that on-demand gear will require. If anybody thinks that we're going to be in a different place 1 year from now, we are not. I would suggest that the council urge other options besides on-demand be researched and funded. I've submitted over a half a dozen different research projects to reduce injury and mortality to whales, and none of them have been approved because the goal is ropeless. No, the goal is reducing injury and mortality, and there are other ways to do that besides on-demand fishing gear. But we basically have not researched any of those options to see if, in fact, they would serve the cause better. But they would certainly be in place way earlier than this on-demand gear because of the substantial issues in fishing. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I have the last two hands online. I will go with Ryan Lynn, and then you'll be the last, Virginia Olson, online.
Ryan from Blue Ocean Gear. It sounds like there's still misunderstanding about data visualization, especially without internet. As someone who is working on this for over a year, I can add some clarifying information as to what's currently available. Blue Ocean Gear has been working in the Northeast with mobile gear and fixed gear vessels by providing a plotter link antenna that allows gear positions with certain radius, currently 5 miles, to appear on most chart plotters. It doesn't need Starlink or internet. The cost is a fraction of it. PlotterLink is currently $25 per month and maybe slightly more, but significantly lower than internet, and it works anywhere. It uses Iridium, and we're able to bring the cost down by pooling the data and only bringing data within the radius. It uses Earth Ranger data, which brings in several gear manufacturers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Virginia Olson online. We have you muted on your end, Virginia.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Again, my name is Virginia Olson. I'm with General. We support the delay. Our board voted to support 1A. So I just think it's incredibly difficult to keep pushing the buck down the road and expecting fishermen to come and be able to attend these meetings along with a barrage of other meetings that we also need to attend.
Thank you for your comments. Back to the room. I would like to take a couple more comments from the lobster industry. Sir?
Bill Bartlett, lobsterman since 1969. Certainly appreciate you people delaying this, but there shouldn't be a delay. This is not feasible for the lobster industry. As my brother mentioned, there was a 2-year report done, and that report came out that it was not feasible in any way for the lobster industry. And also, to sit here today and listen to certain people talk about this is not buoyless for the future, it's only to allow people to go into closed areas, is total BS. When closed areas first started in Massachusetts, we said, well, we'll go in there and grapple. We'll have no buoys on the surface. They said, absolutely not. It's a no-fish zone, period. So now, because you're not getting support from industry in some fashion of buoyless, now they come up with the idea, oh, you'll be able to go into this area. It's a backdoor approach to buoyless fishing in the lobster industry for the future, and that is wrong. It's not going to work. It's not financially feasible for people. You will lose 50 to 75% of the lobster industry in New England. That is pretty unfair for people that have done everything we can so far to coexist with whales. That's working, but it's not enough. That's wrong. This needs to be taken off the table forever in the lobster industry.
I would like to take one more comment from anyone from the lobster industry. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I'm a local lobsterman, Mike Goodwin, and I also own 2 groundfish boats, so I have 2 hats. I stand with Sookie and Bill Bartlett and all them on this. It's, we've done more than we can. I'm 42 years old. I've been fighting this since day one. And, we've changed and changed and changed. We have something that works. I mean, you talk about the whales that were in Jordan Basin with the amount of gear that was in there and nothing came about it. I mean, we just try over and over again. And I think that, this shouldn't even be talked about. It really shouldn't. It's a witch hunt, and, I don't know what else to say. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, and I would like to close public comments. I do appreciate, and I think everyone around the table here does appreciate all the input we've heard from you today. Obviously, we've received a number of correspondence over the past week or so. I know the council has been fully informed of your decisions. I don't want to feel that you're being stifled in your discussion, but we do need to move on and make sure this motion gets its full deliberation, and I think we've had it. So I'd like to come back to the council. Are there any further discussion points on the motion on the table? Seeing none, is there any opposition to the motion on the table to delay the framework? Seeing none, is there any abstentions from the motion on the table? Seeing none, the motion will pass with unanimous consent. Thank you. Just before you guys leave, if...